sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, filling in for Steve Jones, here's Kevin Herr.
Welcome back to hour number two of the Steve Jones Show. It is the best of Steve Jones interviews. Kevin Herr spending time with you today. Steve on vacation still until Monday. We'll have a best of Steve Jones coming up again tomorrow, and Penn State interviews best of also on the way later this week here on the Steve Jones Show. Heard from Tim Doyle in the first hour from the Big Ten Network. Dan Baker, the PA announcer for the Phillies and the Eagles. Great story with Dan Baker and a little bit of history behind that famous voice. If you're a Phillies or Eagles fan, you've heard him quite a bit. And, you know, when you get that crossover time in the spring, or excuse me, in the fall with football and baseball, you may actually have heard him twice in the same day. You can hear that a little bit later on in the podcast at SteveJonesShow.com. Coming up this half hour, we'll have Kevin Kugler, who's worked with Dial Global, Westwood One for many, many years. He was a color analyst alongside of the former Pittsburgh Steeler quarterback Mark Malone. Also did some work for the Seattle Mariners for a few years and replaced Kevin Harlan as the Westwood One lead play-by-play voice for the Final Four back in 2008 alongside John Thompson and Bill Raftery. So some great guys that Kevin Kugler's worked with over the years, and happy to have him earlier in the month of July here on the Steve Jones Show, and thought we'd put that in our Best of Steve Jones Show interviews for you, and we'll have that coming up. Rich Scarsella also will be on the way, too, as again today is the Best of Steve Jones interviews. If you miss any of these, you can always find it online, stevejonesshow.com. Click on podcast. We have some sports news available there, too. You can follow us on Twitter, at SteveJonesPSU and at Kevin Herr. And, of course, our email is always available for you 24-7, no matter when you listen to the show, stevejones@wkok.com. Again, Kevin Kugler with Steve Jones on the Best of Steve Jones Interviews.
Kevin Kugler, Dial Global and Big Ten Network. There are certain people in our business that I just look at and I say, you know what, a pro's pro. And to me, Kevin Kugler is one of them. Kevin, welcome. It's great to have you on the show with us.
Those are very kind words. Thank you much. I'm not sure I deserve them, but I'll take them.
Anytime. Won't we all?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, too many times it's the opposite. So anytime somebody says anything nice at all, I just run with it.
Yeah. I usually leave the station under the cover of darkness. The one thing that you develop along the way, a lot of people that can do well, versatility. For example, you have softball, baseball coming up, and it's not obviously not the only thing that you do. But to go from one sport to the next, football to a basketball to the Masters to baseball, explain how you change pace because the sports are paced so differently.
Well, you have to recognize what you're doing. And I'll be honest, it takes a little time to get into that groove. It's hard to go from a basketball game right to golf. I mean, that's a very extreme difference, and nobody does it better than Jim Nance. He does that every year on the television side. On the radio side, my golf is not as intense as my basketball calls. So you just have to recognize that the different sports come with a different cadence and a little different style. I mean, as a play-by-play guy, you know this. As a play-by-play guy, you are what you are to a certain degree. You call the game as you see it. You try to be as descriptive as you need to be on the radio side of things. But you have to acknowledge that there is a difference. I do a baseball play-by-play call much different than I do a football play-by-play call, because the sport lends itself to more of a, you know, slow pace, more of a storytelling pace. You get the chance to ad-lib a little bit more. I think that's where doing sports talk has helped me a lot, is the ability to speak in long breaks without having to worry about a whole lot of stuff, because you learn to do that when you do sports talk, and I did for 12 years. So it's one of those changes that you make subtly without changing your style, but you just recognize going in that this sport requires me to do it a little bit differently than what I did that other sport.
Only a couple of times in basketball was I in a three-person booth. When you do the Final Four, you're with both Bill Raftery and John Thompson. Obviously, when the ball's in play, you've got the ball. But is there a balancing act that you have to go through when there are two analysts versus one?
Oh, Oh, there's no question, because both of those guys, and Bill Raftor and John Thompson, are two of the most knowledgeable analysts in the game. John Thompson's forgotten more about basketball than either one of us will ever know. And to get his insight as a play-by-play guy, my job is I dial it back a little bit. Perhaps I fill in more blanks when it's just a single analyst, more of the description, more of what's going on. It's a real nuts and bolts call for me when those guys are there. But you have to go into it. Everybody has to understand what's going on. They understand, and we worked together for 6 years now. So fortunately, we've got that rhythm. And I thought this year was our best year that we've had of the 6 years that we've done the Final Four as a trio. And they recognize my role, and I recognize their role. So I step out a little quicker from my call. And they're really good about going amongst themselves. It's almost as if they're having a conversation about basketball, and then I'm kind of filling in the blanks as to what's happening on the court. That's how I've approached it the last few years specifically, and it's really worked out well because Raft is great at leading Coach Thompson into things. Coach Thompson then jumps in with his bursts of wisdom, and then I come back for the play-by-play. It is a balancing act, but it's one I've really relished and enjoyed over the last several years.
Do you take a different approach at all when it's a college football game versus the NFL when you work Dog Global?
You have to. College, the atmospheres are different. And to me, you have the ability as a broadcast team to be a little bit more, I don't want to say critical, because I have no basis to be critical of anyone who's playing football at a high level because, you know, once Pee Wee League ended, that was the extent of the Kevin Kugler football career. So I'm certainly not the guy who's out there criticizing. But I think as an analyst and as a team, it lends itself to a little bit more criticism of something that a player does, at least in my opinion, at the professional level. I have a real hard time on a broadcast saying this sophomore quarterback did a terrible job. He has a horrible – you can say it's a bad pass, but I try not to get into the critique specifically of the specific player in college because the backdrop is so different than the guy who's getting paid a bunch of money to play the game. And also the atmosphere at the stadium lends itself to a different call. College atmospheres, especially in football hotbeds like at Penn State or Ohio State or Nebraska or other places in the Big Ten, the atmosphere is so much more intense in a lot of ways than it is in many NFL cities that it just sort of adds a different air to the broadcast.
Yeah, you and I have the exact same approach, so I know exactly where you're coming from. Although we do have photos of you and your Pee Wee football career, tackling form, not good.
I was great at handing out water, though, which was where I ended up at the end of my Pee Wee football career.
Hey, what steered you into this?
Yeah, you know, it was honestly the inability to succeed in broadcast here in business college. That was what pushed me into it. I always loved it, and I always loved being around sports, and my goal was to become a sports agent because I wanted to stay around sports, and I always thought, I appeared to have an acumen for business. Maybe I'll go through business college and go to law school, become an agent, because what the world needs, as I've found out, is more sports agents. That's what this world is lacking, is lawyers and sports agents. Fortunately, I was steered out of that by some horrible experiences in a couple of economics classes where I realized that I really didn't have the same business acumen that I expected to when I got to the collegiate level. And so I went into broadcasting as another way to stay in sports and be around sports. I always enjoyed the game and the strategy involved and the excitement of being around sports. Unfortunately, my God-given physical abilities weren't such that I could really make anything in the world of sports with an actual playing career. So I had to figure out a different way to get into it. And once business college kind of went flop, I said, well, let's try broadcasting. And I've been very fortunate to have it work out to this point.
You'll have softball coming up. You'll also have the College World Series in Omaha, your natural habitat, coming up.
Yes.
But that's also a lot of teams to get ready for. Obviously, you'll get sports information directors to provide you information, but what are some of the extra things that you'll do along the way to try and get to know the subject when you have so many teams that you have to broadcast?
Well, one of the things that you find out over the years is that guys who do the team on local radio know the team better than almost anybody. So you try to talk to as many broadcasters as you can, get 10, 15 minutes with them even, and pick their brain, get a couple of stories. Same thing with sports information directors. The internet is a wonderful tool as well for anything that we do these days. I can read the entire season's worth of stories about a team or an individual player from simple Google searches. And it takes a lot of time. I mean, these are eight teams usually in the College World Series that you've not seen much of. Fortunately, now every game is broadcast to the regional and super regional. So these next two weekends, I'll spend a lot of time watching college baseball, watching college softball, learning about these teams as best you can. You're never going to be on a national level as fully invested or versed as the local guy. But you try to find those little stories that you can weave in during the broadcast to personalize it a little bit more, especially on the college level. It's hard to come up with new stories about Tom Brady or about Brett Favre when he was playing, or Aaron Rodgers, or anybody, because their story is well known and it's told year after year after year. But these college kids, a lot of times, that's the first time their story is being told. And that I love that. I love the ability to take what was a local story and make it more of a national story, because there are so many great stories on baseball teams and softball teams, and it's fun to tell those stories, but you've got to find those stories, and that's where the prep work comes in over the next couple of weeks.
You referenced earlier in this interview about doing talk radio primarily in Omaha for many, many years, and I believe the middle of last year you decided to, with all the opportunities you have other places, to move on. In the end, was that the decision to get that because you just needed so much time to get ready for the games we're talking about?
It was. I had an opportunity that came up in the summer last year to do more work with the Big Ten Network and supplement my work with Dial Global. But I've got two kids, the two daughters, 10 and 13, and have been married to my wife for 17 years, and she's been a trooper through all this. She's a coach's daughter, so I always tell journalism students, when you marry, marry well. Marry somebody who understands the games are weekends and nights, because a lot of women don't quite get that, or a lot of men, I'm sure, on the female side don't quite get that when they're marrying somebody that, oh, by the way, I can't go to that wedding slash birthday party slash deal because there's a game that night. Right. But it was just one of those opportunities that I had the chance to be able to do play-by-play as essentially a full-time job, and it's something I didn't know if it would come again. The show is extremely successful. It's still on the air. My former co-host is working with another guy now, and they're still doing a great job. It was the number one show for a lot of years in Omaha, and it was hard to give up, but it was one of those things that if I didn't do it then, I didn't know when I would do it, and I thought, well, let's take a shot, see how it goes. It's been great. It's been a great year so far. I've been extremely busy, did a ton of games, 35 football games this year between NFL and college, and a ton of basketball games. I haven't bothered to count those up yet, but it's been really fun. It's been different for me. I've had different time to prep, which has been interesting to kind of get a new schedule, but it's been a good move. It's been a good move overall, the chance to do more play-by-play, which is why I got into the business in the first place, is something I couldn't turn down.
There are certain venues that you go to in this job, which I think a lot of fans would love to be in your shoes when you go to that particular venue. What was it like for you the first time you walked through the ropes at Augusta National?
Breathtaking. I'll never forget it. It's one of my greatest memories that I've ever, of anything I've ever done. And I've gotten the chance to meet some amazing people that, a kid from Nebraska who grew up in a house that didn't have a lot of, grew up in a single parent home. My mom was a teacher, and we didn't travel a lot, and to have the chance to do all this stuff still just blows my mind. But the first time I was at Augusta several years ago, we get, as part of the radio crew, we get a couple of golf carts that we can use to go to our various holes and check our broadcasts and transport people around the course. Well, it was Wednesday night, the day before play began, and I was going out to the eighth hole to check our broadcast, make sure we got our equipment put away, and I'm all alone on this golf cart, and I'm driving up over where 10 is, 10T, and 9 green. And the sun is setting, and I'm all alone at this moment on Augusta National. I'm driving a golf cart. The sun is setting through the trees. It's just as quiet as can be, and I'll never forget it. I'm sitting on that golf cart, and I stopped, and I just sat there for a minute. I thought, how unbelievable is this? I'm sitting on Augusta National, the sun fading in the distance. I'm all alone on this hallowed ground, and I'm watching the sunset before the first day of Masters competition. It's to me, it's the moment that I always think of when I think about how lucky I am to do this. And I always think of how many people who are right now doing their job somewhere wouldn't trade their job for that moment. And I know a lot of people, a lot of my friends have told me, I'd trade almost everything I do to have that moment. And it's something I'll never forget. It's the most amazing place to be. And to be there alone on a Wednesday night was something I'll never forget.
We're with Kevin Kugler, Dial Global, Big Ten Network. Was there ever a point where, I think there's certain sports which are natural to do, basketball, football. I think natural for anybody who loves play-by-play to do baseball at a point. Was there ever a sport that they handed you where you had to put a lot more into it prep-wise, had to put a lot more into it just to make sure that you were fully versed on the sport, and that it was more work than people would realize because it wasn't in your comfort zone at that moment? Maybe eventually it became your comfort zone, but wasn't there yet.
Two sports that I've done that weren't in, have not been, and will likely never be in my comfort zone. Wrestling. I did several wrestling duels a few years ago, which I had the foggiest idea what was. My main experience with wrestling was the Hulk Hogan leg drop, and that wasn't happening in any of the wrestling duels that I was a part of. There weren't ropes to climb up on and fly off of. So Macho Man wasn't running into the ring. There was no Iron Sheik. There was no Hulk Hogan. So I had that was jumping into the deep end of the pool with no life preserver. But it was worse when I was asked to do a rodeo several years ago. And, I was taught at a very early age, never say no to anything. That was one of my mentors who I listened to as a young broadcaster just coming up. He says, when you're young, never say no to anything.
Right.
You want to be the eager guy. So I said yes to do play-by-play for a rodeo. And now they've never asked me back, so I think that can kind of explain why, how that whole event went. But you talk about being out of your comfort zone. I grew up in Nebraska, but we did not grow up on a farm. So I had, mutton busting showed up, and I'm watching kids riding sheep and trying to stay on these sheep, and I'm expected to broadcast this, and I have no earthly idea what's happening, or this guy has got to tie up a cow, and I don't know what's happening on this thing. It was by far the most nervous I've been of a broadcast because I had no idea what was going to happen when I opened my mouth. And you hate that as a broadcaster. You like to go in. You may not know everything that's going to happen in the game because obviously it happens in front of you, but you at least have an idea when you open your mouth what sport you're going to be talking about. I opened my mouth, and I didn't know what was happening. I didn't know what these guys were doing, and that was called survive and advance mode. I just wanted to get through that, and I did, and I've never been asked to do rodeo again.
I don't think anybody listening right now would know what to do with that. By the way, Kevin is a graduate, by the way, of the Ron Moeller tailgate because he did a blue-white game. I think it was with Glenn Mason, if I recall. And
yes.
Came down to the Moeller tailgate, joined Jack Hamm and me for that. And the next time you're here, we want to make sure you're a part of that. You are great to be around, and you do an outstanding job. Thanks a lot for the time you gave us today. I had a lot of fun with it.
Oh, I enjoyed it as well. Anytime, I'd love to come back. Thanks for the invite.
Kevin Kugler of Dial Global, formerly Westwood One and play-by-play radio voice, as well as doing some work for the Seattle Mariners over the years, part of the Best of Steve Jones Show interviews here on the Steve Jones Show. Don't forget, you can email any questions you have for Steve when he comes back. We'll answer Monday, stevejones@wkok.com. In the next half hour, Rich Scarcella will be coming up. We'll get you caught up on the news as well. It's the Best of Steve Jones Show interviews on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
I really need a used car.
Sunbury Motors has lots full of used cars.
But it has to be a good used car.
Well, they're not good.
What?
They're great. Sunbury Motors has over 300 used vehicles to choose from. Cars, SUVs, and trucks so good, we wouldn't sell them if we wouldn't drive them. That's probably why we consistently sell over 200 cars a month. And when it comes to new, Sunbury Motors is the largest Ford dealership in the Central Susquehanna Valley. Sunbury Motors makes buying a new car easy with a huge inventory and lots of choices.
And I'm a smart shopper, and I know what the price should be for the car I want.
Well, here at Sunbury Motors, you get our lowest price promise. We research prices on used cars so much that if you find a better deal, we'll beat it. That's a promise. So here's your keys.
Thanks.
Take a test drive today at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and our Kia dealerships at Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Shop 24/7 and see our inventory at sunburymotors.com. That's sunburymotors.com. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, filling in for Steve Jones, here's Kevin Herr.
Welcome back to the Steve Jones Show. For Steve, on vacation this week, but back on Monday when high school football starts their practices and college football practices are in full swing. Matter of fact, earlier this week, Monday, we talked a little high school football with several area coaches, including Jim Kaiser, the Danville Ironman. If you want to hear that podcast, just go to stevejonesshow.com and click on the podcast for Monday and talk a little college football with Joe Susan. And Doug Birdsong was my special guest co-host. I feel we might as well get comfortable with each other. We're going to spend a lot of time with each other again this fall with Bucknell Bison football on one of our sister stations, Eagle 107. If you want to hear that podcast and Joe Susan as well, just visit us online again, stevejonesshow.com, and click on podcasts. Kevin Kugler earlier today in this hour of the program, Dan Baker and Tim Doyle last hour. Baker, the PA announcer for the Phillies and the Eagles, and Tim Doyle from the Big Ten Network in the first hour as well. And again, those will be available on the podcast later on this evening here on The Steve Jones Show at stevejonesshow.com. Remember, if you want to follow us on Twitter, we update the guests on the show and even answer questions too, at Steve Jones PSU. And you can follow me on Twitter as well, at Kevin Herr. Our Facebook page, Steve Jones Show, make sure you like us, and we'll give you information on what's going on in the sports world and give you the insight on Penn State football as well. I know everybody wants to talk about the quarterback battle right now, and you know Steve's talked about it many, many times. He will be very content to see what Christian Hackenberg can do in the next couple of weeks instead of just hearing about it. And that's when he'll make his decision on where things will stand. And Bill O'Brien, of course, will have the final decision on where things stand at the starting quarterback. We'll talk more about that later on this week with the Best of Steve Jones Show Penn State edition. Right now, it's time for Steve's interview with Rich Scarcella.
Rich Scarcella, Reading Eagle, joins us, outstanding on the Penn State beat as one of the writers for many, many years, but also Yankee fan extraordinaire.
I like how you qualified that, but a prime New York Yankees fan.
You are a prime New York Yankees fan. Yankees. In fact, I want to start there first. Mm-hmm. This is your team, your group.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't recognize anybody in your lineup, and I follow the game closely.
I don't recognize it either. I was there last Tuesday night at Yankee Stadium, and I had told another Yankees fan the day before, I said, I'll probably see a 2-1 game. It was James Shields against C.C. Sabathia. I was close. It was 3-1, Kansas City.
Yeah.
The bottom of the lineup is just atrocious. And, you know, it's filled in with guys who have been designated for assignment and, borderline prospects like an Almonte and who's okay, but he's not one of the top prospects in baseball. And frankly, as a fan, it's tough to watch, but that's the cards that the Yankees have been dealt because of all the injuries.
In fact, the ratings for Yes Network are down 40%, yeah. So obviously it's tough to watch for a lot of Yankee fans. You aren't alone. But what kind of credit should Joe Girardi get? Because he has still cobbled together a team that's over 500 and is not that far out.
Yeah, I think he deserves a lot of credit. I think this is as good a managing job as he's done with the Yankees, including the World Championship year of 09. If you watch who he trots out there every night, it's amazing that they're, seven games over 500 at this point in the season. Now, it'll be interesting to see what reinforcements show up, what and how they play. Jeter, Granderson, and A-Rod. See how much they can help this team. It'll be interesting to see how effective they are. But he's done a great job, and that's primarily due. They do have very good pitching. They do have very good pitching, and that's really been the backbone of the team so far.
No question. And speaking of which, Mariano Rivera getting his just due. I thought the American League All-Stars did it right. I thought the Mets organization did it right. They let him take the mound by himself and nobody behind him. It was really, I thought, a great and magic baseball moment.
I did, too. It was something that I'll remember for a long time. The thing that I didn't understand was, as I watched the game and sometimes I'll follow it on Twitter, and I couldn't believe some of the national baseball people criticizing Leland for not pitching him in the ninth inning. And he wanted to make sure he got in the game, and the only way to do that was to pitch him in the eighth inning. And I perfectly understood what Jim Leland did, and I thought it was a very, very special moment.
If they had been able to get a rally and get to 5-1, for example, which would have allowed Joe Nathan then to warm up, then he would have pitched him in the ninth inning. But he did exactly the right thing. He pitched him the eighth because it was the single most important moment of the game.
Yeah, and also because he wanted to guarantee that he got in the game.
No question.
I mean, he could have thrown him in if, let's say, the National League was mounted a rally in the bottom of the eighth and he was loose, and he could have brought him in the middle of the inning. But then you would have lost all that other stuff,
right?
You know, bringing him in at the beginning of the inning, clearing the field, that kind of thing. So I thought it was just perfect.
I
thought it was perfect.
Yeah, I did too. It could not have been handled any better. And the thing that is amazing about Mariano Rivera, and you know, of course, I'm a diehard Red Sox fan, mm-hmm. and somebody said to me, you know, Red Sox are the only team that really has Mariano's number. And I said, nobody has Mariano Rivera's number. I said, just good professionals happen to have good at-bats at good moments. I said, that's about what it comes down to. But he's having another phenomenal season. I mean, he really looks like he could go another 2 years if you wanted to.
Yeah, I my son, who's a Phillies fan, works for the Phillies, said the same thing to me yesterday morning. I said, nah, he's done. He just wanted to make sure he came back following the injury and went out on his terms. And I know what you're saying, and he has been very effective. He's only blown two saves. I think he's 30 for 32. And he's been tremendous and a big part of why they're above 500. And I don't think he'll continue. I think this will be it.
Right, and you bring up a good example because your son is working for the Phillies, and I was at the White Sox-Phillies game Sunday. Mm-hmm. And Papelbon is probably 5 miles per hour off than when I saw him with the Red Sox. I mean, 5 miles per hour off. Mm-hmm. Papelbon has had a good run in his career in this role, which to me amplifies the greatness of Rivera because he's been at that high level and has never varied from it.
Yeah. You're talking 17 years?
And 17 years.
Last year. I think it's 17 years.
Yep.
He's been at the highest level as a closer. Well, nobody's even – I mean, you look at Lee Smith, Trevor Hoffman, guys who are right behind – or who are behind him in career saves – nobody's had this kind of run.
No.
And forget what he's done in the postseason. I mean, that to me is just it makes him the greatest of all time is what he's done and how over the longevity over the 17 or 18 years whatever it's been.
A-Rod has worked his way to Scranton Wilkes-Barre, mm-hmm. but he was with Trenton and he homered at Reading the other night. Were you at the game or?
I was at the game. I was just telling Brian, I'm on vacation this week, but I went out to the park, and obviously I have a little bit of inside information. They had predicted only a crowd of maybe over 2,000 before it was announced Sunday, and then Monday morning we had a big story in the paper, and they drew almost 6,000, and it was interesting. His first at bat, he grounded out. His second at bat was a 12-pitch at bat. He kept fouling, I think he fouled off at least six or seven two-strike pitches, whatever it was. And the third one, he just crushed the ball, fastball, off one of Redding's relievers. Made three or four routine plays. And he left the game after the seventh inning, and then he signed autographs, Steve, for a good full inning. Outside or along behind the Trenton dugout. And so it was kind of neat, but, you know, we've been fortunate here in Reading. We've been able to have several guys on rehab assignments, Chase Utley, Carlos Ruiz, and Carlos Zambrano, to name a few this year. And so the circus, even though there was a strong media contingent from New York, it wasn't as big a circus as some had expected. And he's headed to Scranton tonight, and that's where he'll play for the Rail Riders.
Yeah, and he'll play for the Rail Riders tonight. It's another step up for him, and Derek Jeter just played for the Rail Riders himself. So, I mean, that's, you know, for the fans up there, that's worked out tremendously well. Any catcalls in his direction during the game, or were people just curious?
Well, here's the fan reaction that I got. I was sitting about halfway up the grandstand behind home plate. Phillies fans booed him. Yankees fans cheered him.
Sure.
And I didn't hear the verbal abuse about steroids and HGH that I thought I might, at least Monday night. Now, I haven't talked to anybody who was in the stands Tuesday night if that was the same thing that happened then. But I didn't hear anybody saying that, and I was there for the whole time he was in the game Monday night.
I'll deviate for a moment here because I know you're deeply ingrained as a Yankee fan, but because you're at Reading and Double A is the make or break level when it comes to minor league baseball. I mean, if you have a shot at the majors, you'll get through Double A, but a lot of careers stall at this level. Mm-hmm. When you look at the Reading Phillies, what are some names that pop out to you that have potential for upward mobility?
Well, of course, you start with Jesse Biddle.
Yep.
He's their number one prospect. Now, ironically, oddly enough, he hasn't had a win in almost 2 months, and he's pitching today in Portland against the Sea Dogs. And he's got the best potential of the Phillies pitchers. He's one guy to watch out for. Now, they have a first baseman by the name of Jim Murphy, who leads the Eastern League in home runs and who's near the top of the league in RBIs. He sort of parallels Darren Ruff's career. He's like the same age as Darren. I think he's a year younger than Darren Ruff. And he's ahead of Ruff's pace, but of course Ruff hit 20 home runs in August last year here. Ruff is, of course, now playing first base in Philadelphia.
Starting.
Because of Ryan Howard's injury. But he's a guy that maybe has an outside chance to get to the big leagues. And guy who just left here who's they're retraining as a center fielder is Cesar Hernandez,
yes.
Who played second base in Reading last year. Now they bounced him back up to Lehigh Valley because of Ben Revere's injury. They're trying him out in center field. Now, he's a guy I like a lot.
I did, too. I liked him a lot when I saw him at Williamsport for an entire year. And when I saw him at Williamsport, I thought he was a Double-A guy. You know, again, that's when I look at guys at this level, mm-hmm. that I think, can they get to Double-A? Because after that, then that's where the competition really, weeds them out.
Yeah, I like him a lot. He was here for 3 games, and he went 5 for 10. And he dropped one ball on Monday night, from what I understand, Tuesday and Wednesday he did fairly well in the outfield. So we'll see. But they're names to remember, the Biddle, Murphy, and Hernandez.
Is Sebastian Valle still there, or is he with Lehigh Valley now?
No, he's there, and he's struggling big time.
Well, that's too bad, because I thought he's a guy I thought that had a shot when I saw him at Williamsport. He's just a kid.
Well, he was one of their top prospects before last season. It's interesting. That's one guy that I think the Phillies will end up trading is Ruiz, only because they're very deep at catcher. Now, the guy who is, I think, 22, who they acquired in the Hunter Pence trade.
Tommy Joseph.
Tommy Joseph. He's had problems. He had a concussion. He just he got cleared, and he was playing at Reading, and then he suffered another minor injury, so he's out for another week. He's the guy, I think, who's at the top of their list, who they think has the brightest future behind the plate.
What about Michael Franco? Third baseman.
Oh,
he was third baseman at Williamsport. Spells his first name a bit differently than the
I'm sorry.
I liked him a lot.
Yeah, he's got a really bright future. In fact, he's probably moved ahead of Cody Ashe, who they thought was going to be the third baseman of the future, who's now with Lehigh Valley. I completely forgot about Franco because he's only been here 3 weeks, and Monday was the only time I got to see him play. Now, he didn't have a very good game Monday night. I think he might have had 2 errors and went 0-4, 3 or 4, but
right.
He's a guy that has just got off to an incredible start here in Reading, and he's only 20 years old, and he's got a real bright future.
In fact, if you were to tell me, now again, this is Williamsport experience for me when State College plays Williamsport. So, I mean, I saw them play a dozen games.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought Franco, to me, was a far superior prospect than Ashe. In fact, I never thought Ashe would progress. Franco, I thought, would.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt in the minds of the Philadelphia organization that Franco is their guy. Now, will he play in Philadelphia next year? I think probably not. I think he's going to finish the year here.
Yeah.
And then maybe he gets a September call-up when the rosters are expanded. But I would say at the beginning of the 2015 season, there's a good chance he'll be their third baseman.
Obviously, football, Penn State's gone through 1 year now where there's no bowl game. So year two of no bowl game will be this year. Year three of no bowl game out of four is next year. But they filled that with the game in Ireland, which, of course, is the worst-kept secret. When it was announced, everybody knew it was going to happen. Mm-hmm. But still, what does it mean that they were able to go outside the box, be clever about this, and really circumvent the problem by doing this at the front of the schedule?
Well, to me, Steve, I think it's a great thing. I mean, and Bill O'Brien has spoken about this game, trying to arrange it and schedule it, and I can only imagine all the things involved with it. He's talked about it for a long time. And I think it's a great idea considering the circumstances. I honestly think it's more for the fans than even the players.
Yeah, I do too. I think there's going to be more people going than people realize.
Well, not just that. It's, I don't know anything, but I'm guessing if Penn State does what Notre Dame did last year, the team won't be leaving till Wednesday and, flying out whenever and really only spending maybe 4 days in Ireland. So, I mean, I'm sure the players will get a chance to look around and look around Dublin. But I really think this is more for the fans than anybody else. And I would expect, I think I read in one of the press releases that there were 35,000 Americans at the game last year between Notre Dame and Navy, and I would expect somewhere close to that number. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
No, I think you're right. I think there's a definite attraction to it. And, of course, Penn State's going to be the draw. I mean, they'll be the draw. With all due respect to Central Florida, yet the odd thing is it's actually Central Florida's home game. It's actually their game.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you. I think Penn State will be the draw, and I think, it'll be interesting to see. It has potential to draw a lot of people. The cost obviously is not cheap, but then again, if you look at the history of the bowl games, for Penn State and the bowl situation, it'd be one trip in 4 years or five. Maybe people have saved up their money. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question. Maybe they have. This upcoming season, obviously, there's a lot of intrigue to it. But how excited are you to see what they can do as a follow-up to last year?
Well, I'm very interested. I'm very interested in seeing, obviously, whoever the new quarterback is, whether it's Tyler Ferguson or Christian Hackenberg, to see how quickly Bill O'Brien and Charlie Fisher can get him ready to start the season and to see what kind of progress that one of them makes throughout the season. And I think Penn State's going to be a fun team to watch again based on their offense. Of course, it should go without saying by now that the biggest concern is depth and injuries.
And that's going to be that'll be the issue.
That's a big issue.
Yeah, that'll be the issue for the next, few years.
I mean, sure. But I think offensively they'll be a very exciting team to watch. And I think defensively they have some outstanding talent. It's just the key is keeping everybody healthy. And, that's sometimes easier said than done.
Yesterday, Johnny Manziel met the media, the reigning Heisman Trophy winner. And there are 250 to 300 guys around there. And they're talking about the national criticism he's had about leaving the Manning camp and so forth. Now, I realize these are sports reporters, but aren't there more important stories in life than whether somebody woke up late at Manning camp?
Well, this is all I care about. Did he miss a game? Did he miss practice? Did he let his team down? Whatever. If he did something, whether if he woke up late, if he was out having a good time, the only person he owes an apology to are the Mannings.
Right.
And frankly, I don't think it's as big a deal as the national media, quote unquote, have made it out to be. I mean, 20 years old, things happen. He wasn't behind the wheel of a car. Come on. Right. This is this is just, I think this is because it's a slow week, one of the slowest sports weeks of the year. I think the issue has become larger than it should be.
Well, I mean, I wish 250 to 300 reporters would cover the NSA thing, actually.
Exactly.
I think that's
exactly.
worthy of 250 to 300 reporters.
Yeah, right. I mean, there's a lot of tension on that. But I understand your point, Steve. There are more important issues than Johnny Manziel waking up late because he may have been out having a good time at a, you know, at a elite camp. I mean, I just don't get it. I don't understand it, but, you know, there are bigger issues to, you know, with the NCAA. We could go on, you know,
sure.
we could speak about that for the next 20 hours.
Yeah.
How, whether it's Penn State or any, or Miami or North Carolina,
or the
whoever,
or the EA Sports, how they dropped EA Sports yesterday because of the lawsuit by O'Bannon.
That's a huge story, and to me, that's more important than whether Johnny Manziel woke up late or not.
Right, and to me, the future of intercollegiate athletics is wrapped in the O'Bannon lawsuit, the Ed O'Bannon lawsuit.
Absolutely, and I think that's a story that everybody involved in college sports covering it, involved in it, should be following. And, I mean, a lot of people are, but I just think this Manziel thing, you know, it just got a life of its own.
Yeah, it's strange. Rich, it's always a pleasure. Enjoy the rest of your vacation. We appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Steve.
Rich Scarcella of the Reading Eagle talking a little Penn State football as well as some other sports that he covers for the Reading Eagle. We have Rich on several times throughout the season and throughout the year, so make sure you're listening to the Steve Jones Show. We'll have him on a lot during the football season as we get into full swing in the next several months. Matter of fact, football season getting underway for colleges already. High school getting their full practices and two-a-days started on Monday. Talked a little bit more about high school football earlier this week. You can check it out on Monday's podcast. Now, the Best of Steve Jones Show continues tomorrow, and we'll have a Penn State edition as well. So make sure you're listening throughout the week as Steve comes back on Monday. The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. I'll talk with you tomorrow.